showers and a heavy thunderstorm with a high temperature of 78 degrees, a low temperature of 63 degrees.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee, heavenly coffee, heavenly coffee. Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee. Better coffee a millionaire's money can't buy.
And thank you very much. Jingle singers, that must mean it's time for Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, featuring the delightful dulcet tones of yours truly, Adam Lepp, and my special guest who will be on the airwaves very shortly. Of course, I'm on for two shows on Tuesday. We last hour had the pleasure of speaking with my frequent commentator, co-host of sorts, Nick CJ from Brecon in Eastern Wales, talking about some latest technology gadgets, be them smartphones that are quite smart, smart thermostats, Windows 10 updates, and some other interesting topics. On this show, of course, we can talk technology if you like, but pretty much anything and everything is more than welcome to be discussed. We sometimes have special guests, again, from politics, maybe sports or social media or who knows what else. And today we have a great guest, one who's been on my show before, one who's on with Scott occasionally. His name is Dr. Ron Feynman. He's a native of New York City, so that really cool accent is real. He's currently living in South Florida. He is an expert, to put it mildly, on U.S. politics, contemporary American history, and especially U.S. presidents. Of course, with all the goings-on in Washington with President Donald, son of Donald, and son-in-law of Donald, resignation of Sean Spicer, and too many news stories to mention, I'm sure that Dr. Feynman will have a lot of things to talk to us about. Feel free to leave a comment or question or and other insight on my Facebook or the radio station's Facebook if you'd like to join in today's conversation. Ron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and thank you. You're so gracious for the way you introduced me.
Well, you are an expert in contemporary American politics, and I think your brain has been working overtime the last few weeks with all the shenanigans going on in Washington.
Nobody could have imagined this, even as a reality show, honestly.
Well, when you have a reality show host as president, that's kind of what you expect.
Just beyond belief. It's breaking all barriers of decency in the way the president's conducting himself.
Now, last hour we had Nick from Wales on, and of course, what someone in another country might feel about politics across the world is always interesting. And as you heard, people in the UK aren't exactly pleased with the U.S. administration. They definitely preferred Mrs. Clinton, and kind of wondering how Americans elected this particular president. He certainly, we're getting someone who does not have the political experience and comes from outside the system, which may or may not be good. But we're kind of wondering about his decisions as well as issues with his family and his cabinet. Any thoughts, Ron, about people's perspectives on the current administration in other countries?
Well, generally, most countries around the world, as far as we can tell, the general public opinion is very negative toward our new president. There might be a few exceptions. Maybe in Russia they like him. Possibly the governing circles in Turkey like him. And maybe in the Philippines and maybe in Egypt, places that have authoritarian governments. But certainly in Western Europe and in Canada and Australia and New Zealand and other areas of democracy, there is shock and dismay at what is happening and how it is undermining the NATO alliance and generally just the whole idea of international stability.
I guess being in the media, Ron, I'm always interested in the press's interaction with the president, and we had Mr. Spicer resigning earlier this month. Any thoughts on that?
Well, he was under attack all along anyway, Sean Spicer. I think, that he made a fool of himself sometimes in his contact with the news media. But I think working for Donald Trump, honestly, is a hellish job. And I think that's showing up already with the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Even last night when he sort of like hinted more in a joking way he might fire Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price if the health care bill didn't get through. Sort of like a joke, but he likes to have this hangover people. It's a disgraceful way to treat people that work for you. It really is. And I really wish that the whole cabinet would resign en masse and all the staff and say, we're not taking any more of this. That would create a crisis that hopefully would lead to the 25th Amendment Section 4 being utilized by Vice President Mike Pence.
Do you maybe feel sorry for Sean Spicer? I mean, maybe he wasn't the greatest press secretary in the world, but his job is not an easy one.
No, it's an impossible job, and I don't think that it's any easier for Sarah Huckabee Sanders now. You know, the constant lying, constant deception, and it's just horrific. And of course, cutting off the media from having it on television, on cable, is also very wrong. It's curbing freedom of the press. And it's very disturbing and very alarming.
Now, there are many, I guess we could call them Trumpisms, that we could talk about, things that the president has said which may be true, not true, or exaggerated. I guess one that stuck out to me was that he said Obamacare had been around for 17 years.
Yes, I noticed that he said that. Then he said seven, but yes, he has so many slippages. We all are human, but this man has had more slippages than is annoying, than is normal. And you have to realize he misspells on Twitter constantly, and he lies about five times a day on the average, as the New York Times has shown by making a list of all the things he said that are not true. It's an average of 4.5 to 5 a day. This is the so-called alternative news, and unfortunately, apparently, one-third of the country loves it, and that is very alarming because it indicates, even with more education, in the sense that more people get educated now, that the level of education or the level of understanding of what's reality is really a problem in this country for at least one-third of the nation.
We are speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from Florida. He is an expert on U.S. presidents. Certainly, he's following the current administration very closely. He's written a book about presidential assassinations and some what-ifs and conjecture. We talked about that earlier this month. Ron, before we continue, tell my listeners about your book and how to get it.
Okay, the title of the book is Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. It's published by Roman Littlefield. It came out in hardcover in August 2015, has been in paperback since March of this year, and it can be obtained either through the publisher, Roman Littlefield, or through Barnes & Noble, or Books a Million, or Amazon. And in fact, on Amazon, it's at a lower price than the regular paperback price. The paperback price, which is very reasonable, is $17.95, but on Amazon, right now, it's $12.20. It's well worth a read.
Yeah, an interesting book that we've talked about. And certainly in the U.S. presidency, again, I mean, your case in point, you can write a PhD thesis on that and study it your entire life and still have some unanswered questions. And then, of course, every 4 or 8 years, a new president gets elected and history books get rewritten.
That's correct.
Down the road, Ron, when our children and grandchildren take American history or maybe study it, their entire life as you are, what do you think we'll be saying about the Trump presidency, especially compared to Mr. Obama, who is totally different from our current White House occupant?
Well, obviously, about a third of the country hates Barack Obama, and we're not going to change their minds, I guess. I hope it doesn't go down to their children and grandchildren, but I think Barack Obama will rate among the better presidents. He is rated number 12 in the C-SPAN poll of presidential scholars that came out in February of this year, and that's really high to start off with. The only other recent president that started off anywhere near that high was Ronald Reagan when he left office. Now, as far as Trump, I honestly don't think he's going to last much longer. I mean, people say he's going to last the whole term and get reelected, but honestly, I don't think so. He's even talking about pardons, and the more he talks about pardons and the more he talks about the Russian collusion, that he's not involved in it, the more he's indicting himself. And I think he will be out of office, and I have projected in an article on HistoryNewsNetwork.org, and then reproduced on in Newsweek, that he will not last beyond Zachary Taylor's 492 days, which is May 27th of next year. And I still think that everything that's going on is going to make it even more likely that he will be gone sometime in the next 9 months.
You and I talked online, Ron, earlier this month about pardons, and you know, I thought I knew, I mean, nowhere near what you know about the American presidents, but I thought I knew more than a little bit, and I've certainly seen in person Richard Nixon in Watergate, and of course almost an impeachment of President Clinton, and Ford pardoning Nixon, which may or may not have been his downfall in trying to be reelected. It remains controversial to this date. And people will be talking about it, I think, for a long time. But I did not know that you could pardon yourself. I mean, I'm sorry, I admit I'm wrong.
I don't think that's correct. He could say he could do it, but I don't believe you can pardon yourself. And you got to realize, when you pardon someone, they're admitting guilt, that they are guilty of something. And for him to do that and then think he could stay in office, I don't think it's legal. And there is a memorandum that says it is not. There's debate about it, but honestly, that's absolutely insane to think you can pardon others. Yes, you can pardon his relatives. Even Bill Clinton pardoned his brother of a drug conviction, Roger Clinton, which I thought was really wrong, but he did it. But you can pardon your family, you can pardon the people around you, but you cannot pardon yourself. But even Nixon, while thinking of it and looking into it, realized it would condemn his name and history forever, and he wanted to somehow restore his reputation. And although he's not rated high, he has moved up somewhat, and we have a greater regard for the good things he did. The difference is Nixon did some really good things in office in domestic and foreign policy. Donald Trump has done nothing other than appointment of a Supreme Court Justice, Neil Gorsuch, but of course only after the filibuster rules were changed, and he got confirmed by the second smallest vote in modern times, 54-45. Only justice to be confirmed less than that was Clarence Thomas in 1991 at 52-48. So if it had not been for the filibuster rule being changed, Neil Gorsuch would not be on the Supreme Court either. So he has accomplished nothing else except disarray, chaos, anarchy, and concern around the world about American government stability.
So he can't pardon himself. Maybe he thinks that he can. What about pardoning his family? Is there some nepotism rule or some kind of conflict of interest? Can he pardon
his brother of a drug conviction? That's, of course, not the same situation. But I believe he can probably pardon his family. By the way, that reminds me that he apparently this morning, I think it was this morning on Twitter, made a comment again about Attorney General Sessions and then also talked about his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and how well he did as he sees it. And then he made a comment, he brought his own son, Barron, into the Twitter feed. And I'm thinking, why are you even mentioning your son? I mean, why would you do that to your 11-year-old son? The man is beyond belief in his indecency, that he says things that you might think. Every one of us thinks things we don't want people to know. You don't say everything that's in your head. You know, you have to have intelligence to know what to say, what to write, and what not to do. And he has no, he's really out of control. I really think he's dangerous.
Yeah, that's a good point, because there have been children in the White House, and Barron's the first male child in my lifetime to occupy the White House. Of course, we've seen Amy Carter and the Obama girls. And he's 11 years old, and he's obviously innocent. And I mean, I know his parents love him very much. What do you think is going through Barron's mind right now with all this, all the happenings in Washington?
Well, I really don't know, but he doesn't seem like a very happy kid whenever you see him in public. I don't think he likes the attention. I don't think he likes the publicity. I think he wishes his father was not president, and I actually think Melania would prefer to just be in private life. I think, you know, even now I understand Don Jr. can't wait for the 4 years to end, is supposedly he has said privately, and that means he's, I guess, hoping there isn't a second term, because he feels like his own life has been interfered with by his father being president and him coming under suspicion himself.
So do we kind of almost feel sorry for Melania and Barron, that they're kind of stuck in the middle and almost as innocent bystanders?
In a way, it looks like that, yes. I don't think they're very happy, but, you know, that's part of being a public figure. And many first ladies have not been all that happy at it, but they... I sense, you know, whenever we see her, she doesn't seem like very happy when she was on the trips with him. At times she seemed all right, but other times she seemed like she wished she wasn't there, you know, that kind of thing. And I just think he's putting his whole family through a lot of stress, and I think he's unhinged, really. I think he scares me that I could imagine if some kind of a terrorist incident occurs, which probably will occur no matter what, that he might try to declare martial law and suspend the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. I'm concerned about that he could do that. Also start a nuclear war with North Korea, which I understand is a major issue, but that is not the answer. I am very worried about that. You know, so far there's been no major international crisis, so things have gone pretty well. He's been very fortunate, but it's not going to last that way, and I'm just concerned about what could happen.
So we've seen in our lifetime, Ron, some first ladies who are quite powerful, and we talked about Betty Ford. She may have become more powerful after they left office. I think she's done a lot. I think we agree. She's done a lot to be open about drug abuse and that it affects people of all socioeconomic classes and all ages and, of course, men and women. And we agree she was excellent in that regard.
She's a delightful first lady, a wonderful human being, really. I've always admired, of course, she's gone now, but I've always admired her, yes.
And again, Michelle Obama, again, like Hillary Clinton, was an attorney, and so certainly she was visible.
Yes.
There have been rumors about her running for president in 2020. That I'm sure you've seen those. Those have been kind of bantered about since the new president took office. And Hillary,
that's not going to happen, though. I'm convinced she has no desire.
Yeah,
she likes private life within the limits that she's a public figure. I don't think she wants any more of this. I'd be shocked if she ran.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And of course, Hillary Clinton again. I believe she was, you would know better than I would, Ron, she was the first lady with a postgraduate education, and of course she was an attorney.
Yes.
She was thought of as a very powerful first lady, and again, she almost became president, so certainly we saw that. We say maybe Melania Trump, I mean, you know, I think she's a good person. She speaks multiple languages. She's obviously very intelligent. You know, as I mentioned,
yes.
You know, she's very easy on the eyes, to put it mildly. which is okay. I mean, it's fine. I think the first lady's image is important, and certainly there are first ladies that are considered glamorous, obviously Jackie Kennedy being the one that comes to mind, and Michelle Obama to an extent. Hillary wasn't glamorous, but she was thought of as being smart and having good perspective that you might not expect. And as the first lady, it's not an office per se, but sometimes people think of it that way.
Well, Nancy Reagan certainly had a great impact on her husband, Ronald Reagan, that we can say. You know, she certainly was not on the sideline. She was very intimately involved with everything that occurred.
I guess sometimes after death or after leaving office, the president or first lady's impact may change or become larger. And we talked about Nixon after his resignation and, of course, his death. We're almost seeing him as being greater than people might have thought. But, of course, before Watergate, he was thought of as an excellent president in foreign policy.
And in domestic policy. He actually did more in domestic policy than many people realized at the time. And a lot of that now is being destroyed by the Republican Congress and by the president. Like the EPA, they would like to basically destroy the Environmental Protection Agency, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. These were all occurring under Nixon with the Democratic Congress, where, of course, they pushed the law, but he signed it. If he had vetoed it, they had enough votes to override the veto. So he did go along with these important changes.
Now, Ron, might you say that Gerald Ford is one of your favorite Republican presidents? I think he, if he was reelected, he could have done a good job. I mean, the nation was...
Yes, you know, I didn't care for Gerald Ford at the time so much, I guess because of the Nixon part. But even there, 25 years later, Ted Kennedy honored Gerald Ford at the Kennedy Library about the fact that what he had done in 74 was the right thing to do, looking back in perspective. And again, in perspective, things look differently. And I really like Gerald Ford. I think I've said before elsewhere that I wish he could come back from the dead and be vice president right now. I'd feel a lot better rather than Mike Pence, because I think Gerald Ford would be the perfect person to step in now in a crisis.
What do you think Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford up there in heaven, what do you think they're thinking about?
Oh, my gosh. I think Richard Nixon's shaking his head and saying, ha, how in the world is he getting away with so much for so long? I think he would be totally flawed, and I think Ford would be condemnatory. And I think Ronald Reagan, I really believe, is also big. I'm sure that's true, and I'm sure that the Bushes are very unhappy, particularly Father Bush, but, of course, doesn't say anything. An awful lot of members of the Republican Party are being very quiet publicly, but there's lots of hints of discontent behind the scenes and the feeling that Trump is reaching a limit, that eventually they're going to have to take action. And I think there will be a move in that direction if he fires the special counsel, Robert Mueller.
Apparently, we touched on this earlier, but President had a rather derogatory tweet about his attorney general earlier this morning.
Yes. And all along the last week. I'm no fan of Jeff Sessions. I wish he had not been confirmed. But honestly, to have a cabinet member so mistreated by the president in tweets and also in a New York Times interview is an absolute disgrace. And I think he wants to replace him. But if he leaves, it's going to be hard to get another attorney general confirmed because he's going to have to recuse himself from the whole issue of the investigation. And that's not what Trump wants. And if he's going to pick, say, Giuliani or Christie, he's picking people who are involved in his campaign, who are suspects in their own way in what they might have done, and it's going to be holy hell if that is done. I don't think that's going to be possible, but I think he's asking for more trouble. He has no ability to understand what's going on and how he's, in many ways, self-destructing.
I mean, it would seem to be definitely inappropriate to say that your attorney general, I mean, the top lawyer in the United States, is weak. Weak on the Hillary Clinton crimes, the emails and DNC server and intel leakers. That's what the president tweeted, which was at 6:12 this morning. I understand that not everybody's going to get along, but especially considering the current political climate, you do kind of have to pull for your cabinet members, especially the AG. Or am I being a little too optimistic by saying that?
Well, I think you should be, and also he seems to think the FBI director is supposed to be for him. He's for the law, the rule of law, not for the president. The FBI director does not have to answer to the president once he's been nominated and then confirmed by the Senate. And I get the feeling Christopher Wray may be wondering, oh my gosh, what am I getting myself into on this? Because he seems to think that everything is just under his control. This is not an authoritarian government, it's not a dictatorship, but he's moving in that direction, and it's alarming beyond belief.
And do you almost feel, I mean, I understand we may have issues with Mr. Sessions, but do you feel a little sorry for him kind of getting criticized by his boss and trying to do the best job he can?
Well, it's hard for me to get, to be sympathetic to him because the man, I think, is a disgrace to be the Attorney General based on his background. I must admit that I was shocked that Susan Collins, probably the most moderate Republican, went to testify for him. And he's a good friend, and I can see you can have a good friend, but you don't necessarily make your good friend the chief law enforcement officer. And she knew his background in Alabama and how he was rejected for a judgeship, a circuit court judgeship by the Republican Congress in 86. And to me, he did not belong in that position. So I don't feel sympathy for him, but I must say that he gave up his Senate appointment, Senate election that he probably could have kept for the rest of his life to help out. He was a strong supporter of Trump, and now Trump is trashing him. So in that sense, I feel sympathy, but honestly, we deserve better as a person who has the Justice Department.
Of course, we've talked about health care, and that's an ongoing issue.
Yes.
And I think we're in a bit of a health care crisis with the costs and what do we cover, what does the government provide for people. And apparently, President, a little talk with his Human Services Secretary Tom Price and said, get the health care votes or you're fired.
And laughed about it, but that's not right to do. You don't do that. By the way, I'm not a Tom Price fan either, but again, that is not the way you treat your cabinet members. And again, the 25th Amendment, if a majority of the cabinet and the vice president, and you got to remember even Mike Pence, after he picked Mike Pence a year ago, he sort of like seemed to almost say that maybe he made a mistake or he made some kind of a comment one time, a derogatory toward support Pence. So I think that at some point, Pence and a majority of the cabinet need to do what is necessary for the nation and need to step in, and Pence has to declare the Section 4 in effect and become acting president until and when the feeling is the president can either be removed or has shown ability to change his behavior. Because I think it's a real crisis for the country. And again, the danger of a nuclear war or martial law is hanging over us, I believe.
Now, the president will be in Youngstown, Ohio, I believe, later today. It's about 2.5 hours from Marion. Youngstown, Ron, if you don't know, is a rather blue-collar area.
Yes.
Certainly very Democratic, that part of Ohio. Certainly would be more Obama supporters and Clinton supporters. And he's traveling to what might be considered enemy territory. So how do you think the reception will be out there in Youngstown? Will there be protests, or will he get his fans out, or what's
probably both. He'll probably have fans that come out for him. There could be conflict, you know, there could be pushing and shoving and who knows what. But a lot of these people, I think, in those areas are desperate, and they want to believe that Trump has all the answers, and I don't think he has the answers. And, you know, this whole idea that he wants to sign a health care bill, he doesn't even know what they're about, he doesn't even know what he wants, and he wants to repeal a law without a replacement now is the latest thing, and have up to 33 million people have no health care at all. It's just unbelievable. And I also want to comment that his Boy Scout, event yesterday in West Virginia was atrocious, when he actually got the Boy Scouts to boo Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and to bring in about his great victory last November 8th. And it almost seemed almost like he was trying to set up a Nazi youth rally the way it was conducted. And it was absolutely horrific. It was just unbelievable. He has no limits in his conduct in ways that are obscene.
Well, certainly the president could use some lessons in being more of a gentleman.
Absolutely.
I guess that's what
he's saying. I don't think he can. Everybody says he's 71, it's too late to change him. That is a problem. I don't think necessarily it has to be that way, but everybody seems to just say he's the way he is and we have to live with him. And I say the nation cannot afford 4 years of this.
Well, he certainly, again, as I've said, is in stark contrast to President Obama.
Absolutely. Obama, with his faults, he wasn't perfect. Certainly was always a gentleman, very classy, very dignified. And I'm just imagining if Obama had ever acted one-tenth of what Trump has done, they'd be calling for his head, the Republican Party. And yet so many of them are now somehow now willing to sit back and just mutter in private and not do anything about it. But I think that more and more there's going to be a push that something has to be done, because the man is out of control and he's a danger to the nation.
Okay. We're speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, who's been on with me and with Scott previously. He's an expert on presidential politics, U.S. history, especially from 1900 to 2017. He's live from Florida, but that really cool accent is real, folks. He's a native of New York City, as we like
Thank
to say.
You.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, Ron? Again, you're never really at a loss for perspective, I think. And there's so much going on right now. It's almost a case where pick a topic, and I'm sure you'd...
Well, I want to point out that my blog, The Progressive Professor, I write on every day. So that's something everybody should look at, theprogressiveprofessor.com. It depends on what you want to come up with. There's so many things going on. But everything is sort of like, you got to wonder, how much longer can we take this kind of stress that the country is under? You know, talking about health care, I think there are literally millions of people whose health has deteriorated because of the stress and tension over having to deal with Donald Trump and his craziness. And I think I know many people on Facebook are very worried, and I am, about the long-term future, so, and the short-term, and the future for our children and grandchildren. So it's not a healthy atmosphere, and we've never had a situation like this, never. In fact, I'm in the middle of writing an article I might try to publish about other presidents who came in and had conflict right away. The other two that really stick out, other than the Civil War beginning, of course, which clearly is a crisis, other than that, would be the two presidents who came in because of the death of the president. John Tyler, 1841, and Andrew Johnson, 1865, got into constant conflict, and both faced impeachment. Tyler was not impeached, but Johnson was, and went on to a trial, was found not guilty. But the stress and tension was very high, because they had come in, you know, after the president died, and they had both been former Democrats who became a Whig and a Republican, Tyler a Whig, and Johnson becoming a Republican nominee for vice president. And I think it's the closest case. But even Nixon, when he came in, we didn't have this kind of conflict. It took a long time for this kind of thing to develop. So this is very much a unusual situation, and it's a dangerous time in the early 21st century to have to deal with this.
Now, Ron, you still teach part-time, as we
yes.
talked about. Certainly, your political leaning is to the left, but I mean, you're a scholar, so I mean, a lot of it is just fact, and then we'll discuss your opinion and a lot of what-ifs. When you teach, if one of your students has a political leaning a little different than yours, do you take that as a challenge, or what's your perspective on that? Because everybody has...
I've had many students over the years who are, I guess I'll call them conservative, and we have a good time debating. I like debate in class and out of class. I invite them to my office hours. Some of them have become lifetime friends, and we have a good time. We laugh about it. You know, we don't get angry. It's a lot better than the old crossfire on CNN, where sometimes it got nasty. We always managed to coexist and get along. And honestly, I can learn from others. I'm not claiming I have all the answers. So I'm very open-minded and tolerant, and I think my conservative students, past and present, would agree on that.
So maybe even the current administration could use some lessons on agreeing to disagree and debating like adults.
That's correct, but there isn't much of it, certainly, and that's the problem. It's a confrontational attitude is constant, and it's not healthy. It's too much.
And I guess also we've had some book signings. We discussed that when you were on a couple weeks ago.
Yes, I'm going to have another one this Friday in Coral Springs, Florida, yes, at Barnes & Noble.
Wish you could come to Youngstown, then we could come to your book signing, and that would be kind of fun.
Yes, I suppose. But the question of the travel cost is the issue. Here it's local. I just drive, you know.
So if somebody comes by, and I'm sure you have people that buy your book and want to talk to you and want you to sign the book who don't agree with you politically, I guess you probably take that as a challenge. I mean, you like to debate, and you do it.
I love debate, and I have no problem dealing with anybody as long as they don't come off as screaming and yelling. And I really haven't had that. In fact, a few weeks ago in Fort Lauderdale, I had a signing, and I had this one gentleman, an attorney, who was definitely for Trump, and we had a good time joking and laughing. But me making my points, his making his points. But we shook hands at the end, and he bought my book, so I was very happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people like to read something that has a different perspective. And that's kind of the way politics is supposed to be. I mean, yes, you might debate, but then you shake hands afterward and realize it's America, and free speech is one of the things that our founding fathers.
Absolutely. Freedom of the press as well, yes.
And certainly we've talked about the fake news and Donald Trump's, out of lack of a better term, sketchy relationship with the media. And as a media person, you know, I certainly have an issue with that. And yes, some news is fake. Sure it is. But being a news person isn't an easy job.
No, it's not. And I really do admire all those journalists who have to deal with the White House press conferences when they're held, and also have to deal with all the things going on and try to remain honest and truthful. It's not easy. And I must say, I also admire people who have been heroes of the past, like Dan Rather, still is on Twitter, and also speaks out, and also Ted Koppel does. And it's great to see these people still there in their late 70s and 80s doing this kind of thing. They're like reminders of Walter Cronkite's generation.
Do you have maybe a favorite news person, past or present, someone who's been an influence on you?
Right now, I'd say Rachel Maddow of MSNBC would be my number one heroine, I guess, because she's a woman. I would say her. And also Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC is really outstanding. But Chris Hayes is also good. I also think Anderson Cooper is good at CNN, and also others, you know. So there's quite a few, but I think particularly I'd say Rachel Maddow would be number one and Lawrence O'Donnell number two.
We talked on online earlier, Ron, that later today, my fellow manager here at the station, program director Scott Spears, will be speaking with the person who might be the most famous lawyer of all time, defense lawyer F. Lee Bailey, speaking about O.J. Simpson, who may be getting parole shortly before Halloween. I guess that's kind of appropriate. What are your opinions on Attorney Bailey, Ron? What do you think about him?
Well, he's a great attorney. I did not particularly like the result of the O.J. Simpson trial because I think he was guilty, but the jury decided that there's no question he is an outstanding attorney, great man, and I'd be curious if he's asked about Donald Trump, what he would have to say. I'm not aware he's ever spoken out on him, so that would be interesting. What hour is that on?
He's on either at 12 or 1. I'm going to check the schedule because Scott recently booked him as a guest, and I want to give the proper information.
Well, that's quite a coup to get him, no question.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no question he's one of the great attorneys of modern times, even if we don't always agree with him.
I mean,
just like Alan Dershowitz is another one. Yeah. I don't always agree with Alan Dershowitz, but I respect him and admire him as a great attorney and a great professor.
Yeah, apparently 1:10 to 2 p.m. that F. Lee Bailey will be on.
Oh, I'm going to try to listen then. Thank you for telling me.
Yeah. And again, we'll have the show available in our archives at our website, and I'll post a link on Facebook, because, you know, I'm the webmaster of this station.
You're a great webmaster and a great interviewer.
Well, we certainly try our best. Again, I don't have quite the legacy that Scott does, but I certainly try my best.
Well, you do extremely well, that's all I can say.
So when O.J. Simpson gets his parole, do you think he's going to be a good boy or maybe get in trouble again? Kind of happened before where what he's in jail for is different from the first issue, which is...
Well, I think he probably wants to, but I'm not sure he has ability to control himself. I think he has issues. I'm just hoping so, because if he does mess up, he's back in prison for life, I'm sure. So if he has any brains in his head, but sometimes people have motivations and urges that they can't control, and I think he loves to be always at the center of attention. In a way, he can be compared to Donald Trump. He's got to always be at the center of attention. So some people have said even if Trump is removed from office, he'll be bothering us forever with his tweets and trying to create an opposition party or whatever, that he'll always be a nightmare as long as he lives, and he probably will be, because these people just never have enough attention. I don't really know why. They both had success in their lives, and yet it was not enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad. Simpson was an outstanding football player, and I used to watch him on TV as a commentator. A very smart man.
Yes.
And it's really a shame he couldn't make... athletes set an example for our youngsters. Again, I think that athletes are heroes in America, and again, as a player... And a sportscaster, Simpson was excellent, but out of lack of a better term, he messed up.
He was also in some films like Airplane, and he was quite funny, I thought, in Airplane back in the 1980s. Yes, and unfortunately, not everybody is like a Derek Jeter or a Sam Musial of an earlier generation, people we can fully admire. There are, unfortunately, a number of athletes that are a disgrace in the way they conduct themselves in public, and it's a damn shame because that does not have a good effect on young people.
Of course, you and I are big baseball fans and
Yes. Amateur
baseball historians of sort. We could talk about one of my favorite players, Pete Rose, and you know if he deserves to be in the Hall versus... Some of the current players.
Yes, I have to say, even though what he did was wrong and he's not a very nice person, he's pretty obnoxious, his records, I think I would put him in the Hall of Fame if I had control. And I've been to Cincinnati and seen the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame where he is shown. And, you know, I wish he was in the Hall of Fame, but because after all, there are people in the Hall of Fame who are far from perfect people either. Ty Cobb was a white supremacist, Babe Ruth was a drunk, etc. There are others, so I think that his records, by this point, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame, but I don't know if he ever will be because of his personality. You know, personality does matter, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, it's both ways, and Pete Rose is not exactly a great person. He used to have a restaurant down here in Boca Raton, Florida, and I went there a few times and I saw him there. But of course, he always charged everyone for his autograph, and it wasn't just like a few dollars. And I always thought how obscene that is, you know. But that's the kind of a man he was, and I guess still is.
We are speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, a occasional guest on my show, or on the Scott Spears Show now, which, of course, isn't on now, but it'll be on about 13 minutes after 12. 13's a lucky number here at the station because that's about when the live shows start every hour. Talking about presidents, the current administration, contemporary politics, and we're both baseball historians of sort, at least amateur baseball historians, so we've kind of shifting gears a bit, maybe a lighter topic than some of the goings-on in Washington. Ron, you and I don't agree on whether some of the steroid using baseball players should be in the Hall of Fame, especially Mark McGwire. And I guess you feel that maybe he does deserve consideration, even with the steroid use?
I would say I think Mark McGwire should be considered for the Hall of Fame, yes. But it's an issue more of personality and controversy, because there are others like Alex Rodriguez that, you know, were much more objectionable, and others like that. It's a tough issue, but I don't think it's, I think it's more likely that Pete Rose might make the Hall of Fame eventually than that these steroid using players will. It's a tough issue though, but I'm just hopeful that we will not have any more trouble like this with future contenders for the Hall of Fame.
And certainly it's a touchy issue. Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, they didn't need to use steroids. I think the allure of hitting, 100 home runs a season, and Barry Bonds hit over 70. I think he did it twice.
And Barry Bonds, however, is such an objectionable person in the way he acts. See, Mark McGwire is not that way. That's why there's always the issue, how much should personality play a role in this, or should it just be anybody who's used steroids is eliminated, including Roger Clemens? It's a tough issue, but we have some great records, but the question is how honest are they? How realistic are they? So that's what makes it a difficult issue.
But in the case
of Pete Rose, right, his gambling is terrible, but it had nothing to do with his accomplishments.
Yeah, it's such a touchy issue. We know baseball player, no human being is a saint, but we do have to draw the line somewhere.
Well, that's why I think Pete Rose I would put in. I'm not sure about the others because of the steroid use.
Again, A-Rod, or I call him A-Roid, it seems like he was proud of it. And with McGwire, it's almost maybe he was a good guy, and that is important, and we do give the nod to that. Clemens wasn't always known as, the most hospitable person to reporters or fans, but you can't knock his pitching. I mean, I used to think he was the greatest pitcher of my generation, but since the steroids, I've gone back to Tom Seaver, or possibly Tom Glavine, or Nolan Ryan is the best pitcher that I've seen since I started following baseball in the mid-70s.
Yeah, well, I remember Seaver. He was with the Mets originally and then went to Cincinnati, but Tom Seaver is really a great guy, yes. And so are the other two you mentioned. Nolan Ryan's unbelievable. When you think about his record,
Also that he was still throwing fastballs in his mid-40s, and usually fastball pitchers after 35 start declining. I mean, a knuckleball pitcher can play till he's 60. I mean, Phil Niekro was in his 40s and still an effective player, but Nolan Ryan was definitely something else, and he was a good guy, too. Again, and a businessman, a smart man, and no question, he's one of the greatest ever.
Yes, and interesting, Nolan Ryan, when he was young and was not quite what he would become, was also with the Mets. We had Nolan Ryan and Tom Seaver with the Mets in the late 60s. Who would know we'd have two Hall of Famers on that team when they were young? And Ryan, of course, his full potential came later, but it's sort of like amazing when you look back that they were on the Mets. And I was, of course, living in New York then, so I was a Mets fan.
But like me, though, you would call Tom Seaver one of your all-time greatest players.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
And also, too, I'm kind of a baseball purist. I dislike the DH rule vehemently, and I think the pitcher should hit, the pitcher should field, and Seaver was known as someone who could hit and field pretty well. The other Tom Glavine also. I remember going to a Reds game, and he got a hit, and I was kind of shocked. He's not even a very big guy, but he could really handle the bat quite well. And that impressed me, too, as someone who could do a lot of things well, and he was a good guy, kind of quiet, but no controversy.
There's nothing wrong with being quiet. There really isn't. We don't need people always prima donnas, and there are too many prima donnas out there, including some in politics, of course.
Do you think that O.J. Simpson, let's assume that he gets out of parole and he does behave himself and becomes a model citizen, maybe even going back into sportscasting? I mean, who knows? I mean, he's certainly knowledgeable. I mean, no one questions his intelligence. It's just his life choices. Could that be a good role model for people, that you can actually come back from the dark and become a model citizen?
In theory, yes, but being in his 70s, I don't really know if I see him doing that, and I'm not sure that the sports channels would want to take him on, because he's still very much a divisive figure. There are people who love him and those who hate him, but I still think there's more negativism toward him. So I'm not sure that would be a marketing thing for these sports channels.
Well, we certainly agree that it'll be interesting to follow what happens when he does trade in his prison jumpsuit for the three-piece suit.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one way to take our attention off what's going on, but we can't take off too much attention because our whole future is at stake with our government. So it's good to get off on other things, to think about other issues, but we still cannot ignore the reality of what's going on in Washington, D.C.
Speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, live from Boca Raton, Florida. He's an expert on the U.S. presidency, contemporary politics, and American history's published author, and someone who's been on the station a few times. Hope to have him on regularly. We've talked a little about baseball. We're both big baseball fans and baseball historians of sorts. So let's get back to the presidency, Ron. We had to use a talk about a lighter topic for a few minutes, but I think in this country, there's politics and sports. They do intermingle and affect each other. And I think the O.J. Simpson is political. It's sports related. It's related to crime and punishment and many things that we as Americans are interested in. Any more thoughts to share with our listeners about the current presidential administration and his family?
Well, I am concerned about the fact that his family is so interwoven with what's going on, and it's affecting, I think, their relationship, all of them. There's some now saying, I don't know if I believe that Donald Trump would even throw his own family under the bus because he's throwing everybody else under the bus, as they call it. I find that hard to believe, but I think certainly this, I'm sure the relationship of the president with his daughter Ivanka and her husband is certainly strained, and I think Don Jr., the oldest son, and even Eric, but particularly Don Jr., I think there is more of a strain, and I don't know whether we'll ever learn. It probably will eventually leak out. There's always leakers about what's going on within the family, but it's not a healthy atmosphere for the whole family. To me, their involvement in the government, particularly, Jared Kushner, I think of him as someone who acts like he didn't know what he was doing or he was overwhelmed. And the point is, why is he in such a high position with no background and experience? I think he's been overrated. He is not William Gibbs McAdoo, Woodrow Wilson's son-in-law, who was Secretary of the Treasury. He's not Sergeant Shriver, the brother-in-law of President Kennedy. These are in-laws who are in the government. He's in the Peace Corps, and then later also the War on Poverty under Lyndon Johnson. I think that he's in over his head, and I think that it will scar his family, and I think will cause problems in that family because of this connection, this meeting with the Russian, the Russians last June. Donald Jr. showing very poor judgment and claiming he didn't know much about politics, but I don't think it's a good situation for the whole family. I think it's made their life hellish, and I think it's all because of Donald Trump's ego and narcissism that it has come to this.
I guess there's a little question. He does love his family, but is he maybe expressing that love in the wrong way? And that should you necessarily pick someone close to you if that person's not the most qualified?
Yes, and also we look back, he did not have much of a role in his older children's lives, at all. They've all said that. And he doesn't seem to have an awful lot of involvement in his young son Barron's life, from what we can tell. He's not a model father, let's say. He really is not. And, I think he's too self-centered to really see what he's done. And I think he's undermining the family structure, really, the way he behaves and the way he's given authority and responsibility, particularly to his son-in-law, when I think his son-in-law should not have a intelligence clearance because I don't think he's qualified for it.
So maybe the way he's showing that love could use a little bit of work.
He needs a lot of work. The president needs a psychiatrist. He needs a psychologist, but he's not going to do it because he thinks he's fine. He thinks everything is terrific and great, and that's the problem. He doesn't see reality. I think he's very very dangerous, as I've said, because I think he lives in his own alternate universe.
We've been speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, an expert on the U.S. presidency, contemporary American history, and U.S. government, again, a published author, who's written a really interesting book about presidential assassinations and a lot of conjecture and what-ifs. Ron, thank you for joining us. Hope to have you back on sometime soon.
Oh, absolutely. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
About 1 minute left to the show. Have a great day, Ron. Again, pleasure to speak with you, and you stay warm and dry there in South Florida.
Okay, thanks so much. Have a good day.
And Adam Lepp here with the closing 60 seconds of Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, which is on every Tuesday between approximately 10:13 a.m. and 11 Eastern Time. And we had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman live from Southern Florida about the current presidency, about baseball history, and a few other topics. Hope you enjoyed it. If you go to our website, WWGH1071.com, you can listen to the entire show, and that'll be available later today. Also, Nick C.J., a fellow computer tech that's on regularly, was my guest during most of the show, Adam the Computer Guy, which was on between approximately 9:13 and 10 a.m. today and every Tuesday. Scott will be in shortly after noon with Now. Again, special guest will be noted defense attorney F. Lee Bailey, talking about O.J. Simpson. Thanks for listening. I'm Adam Lepp.